So welcome everyone to this talk on non-self anatta. So it is quite a complex topic, and maybe the first time that I really want to go directly into it. Sometimes I touch from here and there to it, and here it's really like it's the theme of the topic. And it's important for me to say first that I'm really like not a master there. It's a very, very deep and complex subject. So my intention here is to share my reflections, my understandings, my questions with you so that you have more questions. Which is very important and useful for the practice, and I will say why. But so, not the idea here in this talk is not to try to arrive at a conclusion about self or non-self. I'm not there. I have no conclusion about it, and I don't think a conclusion is needed either. I will come to this. I don't think we need to know whether there's a self or not behind our life. We don't really need this for going towards freedom. So it's a very interesting process for me because it puts me in the situation where I have still to be a bit coherent, which I failed in my head many times, so we'll see how it comes across here. And it makes me think, it's very fruitful for me. It's very fruitful for me to have to think like this and to make sense a little bit. And just now when I was about to start speaking, I just remembered something I heard about Einstein. I'm very passionate about physics, and Einstein is preeminent, of course, in physics. And when he came with his first relativity theory, then it was like a huge thing. Yeah, it was a very complex theory. And then 2 years after having written about it, and it was kind of accepted by the scientific community in 1905. Then in 1907, he was asked to write a kind of a summary to make it more clear, kind of. And that's when, in the process of trying to explain everything and what it implies, he realized that there were some points where he cannot explain it, where there are some aspects, and I don't want to enter it, but it was around gravity and how gravity is instant force that goes, then it was said to go faster than the speed of light, which doesn't match with Einstein's whole theory. Gravity was an instant force, and that didn't match his theory. So he was there with a big problem. And he took 8 years of reflecting before he came with this second theory of relativity, and which included gravity. So, and that's the process of when there is a problem to solve. And that problem to solve come only when we somehow have to make sense and see, okay, so there is this theory, what does it imply? And then we hit the wall, and then we find that this theory doesn't match here, it doesn't prove to be correct there, and how do we solve that and evolving? So that's what I felt about myself when preparing this talk, is like, oh yeah, but then this doesn't match with that, and how to accommodate that. Very fruitful, very interesting. So, one thing to keep in mind with this practice, and for those of you who were already at the first home retreat and the second home retreat, where we practice the three characteristics proposed by the Buddha, And so these characteristics of impermanence and dukkha, suffering and now non-self, it's a kind of practice. It's one style of practice. It's a practice of letting go every time. Anatta is also a practice of letting go. And but it's not addressing a lot of aspects of the Dharma. Not addressing a lot of aspects of the Dharma, like, for instance, compassion. You see, it's not addressing this, or I'm not addressing it in this practice, at least. Maybe some people have the skill to join them more easily. But I'm not meaning that this is the way to go. I just think this is a very interesting aspect of the Dharma. And for those of you who feels the same, then there will be some passion about the practice in that style, but not more. And in general, I think we have to remember why we practice, any kind of practice. And we have to fine-tune our reason of practicing. Maybe in the beginning, it was just to find a bit more peace and stress and ease and meaning into life or something like this. And maybe we can check that and see how it changes. And I like, as I've often said, I like the Bodhisattva vow of practice, which is I'm practicing so that I have more clarity on who I am and what life is about in order to relieve suffering from all beings. So if I'm practicing the exploration of non-self, it's not just for my own sake or for my own peace of mind or whatever. It's for being more in tune with the totality of life and more helpful to life. So if we have this in mind, then there will be no mistake in going in a single direction like non-self. But if we don't have this in mind, it can become very dry, intellectual, and selfish, and on the kind of metaphysical, you see? It will lack the heart and the depth that comes with it. So this practice is an aspect of a bigger path that is a path towards freedom in order to help and serve for our goodness and the goodness of all beings. Very important when you hear these kinds of talks to keep this in mind, I think. So anatta means un means not. And atta is connected to atma, the notion of soul. So it's no soul, no self, no entity. Yeah, so it means that there is, it means that in the idea, it means that there is nothing in us that is everlasting, which is in contradiction with some other spiritual approaches. And again, we don't have to choose. I think it's just good to know these things and to understand a little bit what it means in our experience, and we will see how to experiment with that. So there are different ways to understand anatta and different depth, maybe. One way to understand it is, and it's maybe the most common, is it's the realization that we don't exist separately from anything else. Yeah, anatta means there is no self in itself, not depending on all the rest. It's a myth, doesn't exist. Anything depends on everything. It's not separate from the whole. Yeah, so that's not so counterintuitive, I would say. But still, it's not integrated in our lifestyle, in the way we view life and in the way we think, feel, and act. It's not integrated. We don't live as if we were part of a whole all the time. Yeah, if we were living like this, then that would be the end of the self-inflated ego, for instance. Yeah, the thinking about me and what can I get from this situation, what can I get from life, what can I get from this person that I meet or whatever. It would be the end of that. But it's not. Obviously, it's not. It's still very much there, which means that this non-self, meaning the fact that I, in my case, Denis, does not exist on my own without all the rest that is around, that's not yet clear. If it was, I would be much more sorted, with a much less problematics and inner critic, for instance, that comes, or a lot of insecurity would be gone. Yeah, things like this. So this is an aspect of anatta that we can practice. And how do we practice that? It's very much about thinking about it, actually. What does that mean? It's the philosophical aspect of the practice. So I don't exist separate from anything. It means, if I reflect about it, I can come to the conclusion by there are different ways. Let's start with something external because it's easier, maybe. Like Thich Nhat Hanh, for instance, he likes to take a book because he's writing. And so he often speak about a piece of paper. And he said, like, the piece of paper, in the piece of paper, we can see the whole world. Because in the piece of paper, we can see the tree, for instance. Yeah, because there would be no paper without the tree. So when we look at the paper, we see the tree. But when we see the tree, we also see the wind that has been shaking this tree, for instance. He's not saying it like this, but like he's starting there. And maybe when we see the paper, we can see the sun, because without the light of the sun, there wouldn't be the tree. And without the tree, there wouldn't be this paper. And maybe then we can see, if we look in this direction, we will see the whole cosmos. Without the whole cosmos, the earth will not be there. And without the earth not being there, then there would not be the tree, and then there would not be the sheet of paper. We can also see the woodcutter. Yeah, and the woodcutter, we can maybe see like the person who has grown the rice for the woodcutter to eat. So finally, this piece of paper is there because all these things exist. Remove one of these aspects of life and you remove the totality of life. Nothing can exist independently of the rest. So we can practice in this way. Sometimes try to watch something or realize that this, and this is very good with food, this is in my plate because this and that and this and that. And we can see the world sometime in our plate. And then when we are familiar with that, we can practice this with the self, the sense of self, the sense of I, the sense of Denis. And then realizing maybe that in the same way, the body, for instance, the body wouldn't exist. This body wouldn't exist without the sun, without the air, without the planet and the stars and everything. And also it wouldn't exist with the people who have produced the food. And so little by little like this, seeing that this body exists because the rest exists. And then we can also do this with the realizing that all our ideas, for instance, what we can sometimes be very proud of our ideas, but in reality, at some level, yeah, there are many different, always important to see that some things worked at some level and not at some other, but at some level, our RD ideas doesn't belong to us, because we have this idea because some people had previous idea before. We are the whole way we think about life, the whole way we view life, the whole way we construct our understanding, the whole, the totality of our understanding and relation with life is part of the evolution of our ancestors. We didn't just one day wake up with no idea at all and start to construct something from the vacuum. This didn't happen. It's part of a process. And the ideas that our friends have and share with us influence on our ideas, and their personality influence on our personality. So what the whole psychological aspect, which sometimes we say me, is constructed of things that are not me, of things that are coming from the outer and from the philosopher and from and from the religion and from the science and from any thought that came or even prior to our birth, like the way our brain was constructed is part of an evolution. So in this, we can see that this sense of me is betraying the reality of plurality. It contains the whole evolution. Or we can see that if something happens, like let's say I am not independent from what happens in America. We can see this. We can see big decisions that are taken there will have an impact on other political systems. All the political systems are interacting one with the other, and I'm also interacting with what's happening in the political system. So whatever decision or whatever is taken in America or in Slovenia or in Australia or wherever you want has an impact. It's just one whole situation that you cannot divide into small parts. The division into small parts is very convenient, and thinking me as Denis is very convenient, practical, but it's just a practical aspect. It's not, at this level, a reality. So then when we think like this, we would also be much more concerned about others, of course, because we see in the other, we see us, and we see that the idea, for instance, of a individual happiness and safety and my happiness and regardless of other is a myth at this level of understanding. That's an important aspect of the Dharma, I feel, interconnectedness. But there is another way of understanding anatta, non-self, which is more puzzling somehow. Here it's kind of it's still coherent, it's still not counterintuitive and manageable, and we can work it out, and I advise that we do work it out. A lot of freedom and compassion comes out of this understanding, and if we can make it our own more. But then there's the another aspect that we have seen in all traditions and philosophy, and even in science at some point now, recently, is in which way do we exist? Which is another question, I feel. Or it's the same anatta, but taken at a different level, because the level of like interconnectedness, it's the idea that we all exist as small bits of a big part that influence one the other, and we were kind of one story, yeah? All bits, parts of one story. But then the question, do I exist, is like, it even place in doubt, a doubt to I am this bit that is part of a whole. And this question, we find it in many, we find it everywhere. We find it in the Western recent philosophy. For instance, we have David Hume. I don't know if it's correctly pronounced, but he says, according to him, there is no self. It's just a bunch of impression, which he use impression to say ideas and feelings held by memory. But there is no one entity behind this. Then we have one big question came, and a very influential thought and thinker, Descartes, he came with this question. So, yeah, what I think is it's important, what I'm trying to do is to say that this question, it's very difficult to realize that it is valid. Like the, do I exist and in which way is a valid question. Yeah, so Descartes, for instance, he was very interesting life also. His work was I think quite decisive for the way we think now. It has influenced a lot the way we are thinking. His wish was to find something solid to construct a reasoning process. What can I trust? Of what can I be sure? I need something that nobody can argument against, a certainty somewhere, a point that is solid, so that from there I can develop a philosophy and an understanding. If I don't have any fixed point, then nothing will ever be solid. So he was reflecting, and finally he came with this idea, I think, therefore I am, which was in the beginning, from my side and from what I heard, very much misunderstood. It's not really, he didn't really mean that I exist because I think in itself. It was more like, because he was practicing doubt, which is also what I advise that we do, practicing doubt, doubting the reality of things. So he was consciously, he decided to practice doubt and to doubt everything. And then he did doubt, do I exist? And then he came with the conclusion that when I'm doubting that I exist, I still see the thoughts doubting of existing. And this is because I see the thoughts of doubting that I know that I exist. Because there's the seeing of the thought, I know I exist. So you see, it's quite mad. It's like this guy is wondering, he's not sure he does exist. Yeah? And you find this everywhere in all tradition. And I think it is very healthy. Not in the beginning, not when we're children. I think it's important that there's not this kind of doubt. We do exist. We exist as this body mind, and we have to construct a very solid, in the Western sense, ego somehow, a solid personality and a solid style and being a person separate from the rest and developing the qualities so that we function well, kind of. This is very important. But at some point, I think we could drop a bit that. So at some point, doubting or wondering in which way do I exist? This is what Descartes was doing there. Important, because what he did there, he did free us a little bit from the dogma from the church. At that time, before that kind of process, it was just believing what the authorities in the church were saying. this is the reality, this is not reality, God is like this, created life like that, and this is who you are. Yeah, and so we were like a civilization, we were believing these things. And he came, and he and others, but he was prominent, came and said, we have the capacity to make sense ourselves. Every human has the capacity to reason and find for himself what is real and who we are. So we don't have to listen to some other people telling us who we are. Yeah, that was a breakout for freedom. Having these kinds of question, really having these kinds of question, is not easy. Really not easy. Maybe now you hear about it and it feels interesting, but how can we make so that it becomes prominent in our life? More and more like pondering, wondering, reflecting about and making this more more clear. It's connected to the fact of knowing that we don't know who we are. Yeah? The more we know that we don't know who we are, the more we will wonder. Not easy to have these kinds of questions. And I think that they are predominant in the spiritual path because they will decide what happens in our silence and in our practice, what our silence and our practice will reveal. It depends on if we have these kinds of deep questions and the understandings that we are definitely not what we think we are. So there are different other possibilities of understanding ourselves or understanding understanding ourselves. There are other possibilities than just thinking that we are our personality, for instance, or that we are this body, for instance. It's very common, even for those of us who have a lot of practice, they still, because it's in the air and it's inherited since long, yet there is still by default we will think we're this body, yeah, by default. I'm not saying that we're not this body, that's not what I'm saying, but just by default what I'm saying is that we don't know, but by default we will act and feel and think as if we were this body, for instance. Yeah, this is the normality. But there are other options. Yeah? We could be, it could be that we are not. And so opening to that, yeah, or opening to the possibility that we are something else, and some people will come with the idea of a soul, some people will have come with the idea of awareness, which will be very much in the Advaita tradition, for instance, that some of us have practiced, and beautiful, we will practice that, that we are ultimate awareness, so that which is seeing, like let's say in meditation, we're practicing. We come to a certain silence and then we realize that everything is seen in meditation. And then we can identify, say, I am that which is seeing. I am nowhere in the scene. So the body is seen, so I'm not the body. The thoughts are seen, so I'm not the thoughts. The emotions are seen, so I'm not the emotions. I am that which is seeing the emotions, the body and the thoughts. Yeah, so that's we find this in Buddhism, we find this in Advaita practice, and probably some other places that I don't know. So that's another option. We can be a soul, and there can be a lot of theories around that are very interesting and helpful. We can be the awareness in our feeling when there is deep silence and this clarity of observation. There's a strong sense that we are the awareness itself. or where Buddhism leads us also, we can there can be no self. That's a challenging one. We'll explore that also, but we cannot even be the awareness. Yeah, the awareness is kind of a, when we say we are the awareness, it's not, we can feel that this awareness is not individual. We can have this idea, and with the idea will come the feeling that that which is observing is not belonging to this body mind. It's kind of coming through. Yeah, so then when we have this feeling, I can have the feeling that my awareness is the same texture and the same thing as your awareness. You know, and so, and that awareness is a shining through me on the objects. For instance, that's a way of viewing that is very helpful, very beautiful. But it has a different taste when we view things like this than the taste than when we view emptiness of self. I'm going a bit too fast here, so I will come back to this on the second talk. Anyway, we have all these views that we can understand and that we need somehow to understand and experiment with. I'm going to say what I mean by experiment with. But in order to be open to explore these views, well, it's not easy. It's not easy because this default mode of I am the body is very, very strong because deeply ingrained. So we have to question and doubt, am I the body? Or am I the brain? Whatever we mean by the brain. Or am I the soul? We have to question all of these things and try to find out and to see what others say in order to support our search. When we hear first, let's say, that there's a possibility that we're just the awareness, that this is our essence. And the rest is the rest, the body mind that is that has birth and death, how Nisargadatta Maharaj would say, is more seen from that perspective, more like an illusion, more like a dream, dreamlike. We find this in all traditions, almost. There's a kind of, but what do I make with this? Or there's a kind of, that doesn't even make sense in my experience anyway, or what's the use of this thing? You know, the entry is very difficult, and they can even be a clear refusal of questioning this, or not knowing how to go about it. And we, as human minds, we're not very talented in accepting new ways of seeing and new ideas. When you see, for instance, one of the many, 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 many examples that we have on this planet is when Galilei arrived with this idea of the, well, he was first Nicola Copernic, yeah, who calculated that it's not the sun that goes around the earth. Yeah, and it's not the whole sky that turns around the earth, but it's the earth that is turning and turning around the sun. Yeah, he calculated that. Then he was banned from the Protestants, and Luther was banning him, and he was forbidden to say that. And then sometime after Galileo, he invented some telescope and glasses, magnifying glasses, and he could not yet have really the proof, but he was really, really in favor of that way of seeing that the Earth is not the center of the universe. Yeah, and me, that wasn't accepted at all. It was like, or the scientists were against him, and most of the philosophers as well, and the Catholic Church this time was really, really not happy with the idea. And so to the point that he had to stop speaking about it, and he was the Inquisition, I hope you say like this in English, the Inquisition was forcing him to repent and to say, I'm so sorry that I was wrong. Although he knew he was right, but he was that or he was killed. You know, so when there's a new concept, a new idea arriving, oh, very, very difficult. Very difficult to change. So now we're trying, we have heard, you all practitioners since some time, some of you since long, long time. We all heard about these things of non-self. But how difficult is it really to do something with it, to take it in perspective and to include this in the way we live? That's the difficult thing, is to understand that there is a possibility that there is no specific single entity behind our experience. To understand that, it's a very complex activity of the mind. And we need not to say, oh, yes, it's like this, or yes, it's not like that, or yes, now I know it's like this. It's not this that we need to do. We just need to understand that it's possible that it's not in the way we experience it. I don't think we need more than that, or not much more. At least, I am sure we don't need to have any certainty. Better not, actually. Better not to be sure that we do not exist, or we exist as awareness, or we exist as body, or we exist as soul, or we exist as mind, or any other kind of entity. We don't need to be sure. We can have theories and experiment with them. Yeah, because any theory that we'll have will induce a feeling, a way of seeing life, and life will appear accordingly. So we can experiment with our theories. And that's what I want to do in meditation. But no need to grasp to any theory. Just knowing that this now, we function since our birth with a set of belief. It's just a kit of belief. We have no idea. It's just a kit of belief, and it gives a certain result. For much of it, quite good, I would say. But also some big problems in our way, the way we see life, especially this over-individualistic sense of self that has developed. And it has always existed. Yeah, we find a lot of about the ego, hatred, and delusion, and all these things in old texts. But now I think it's very strong. The me, and I'm more important than the rest of the other humans. And let's not even speak about nature. And so yeah, okay. So in meditation, how will we experiment with this? In this meditation, we will practice one style, and in this afternoon's meditation, another style. And it is based on the idea that when we have a concept, when we have an idea, and that we use it in meditation, we can make an experience of it. again, that's something like that was very much used, that is very much used in science, and that it's been very important since, especially since Galilei, and Einstein has been, again, one of the master of it. It's called an experience of thoughts. It's leading experiment without experimenting in the reality, but creating experiment so that we can understand and feel. For instance, Einstein, he was said like, still he was questioning, he was in deep trouble with this problem of gravity, as I said. Yeah, this gravity force faster than the speed of light doesn't match with his theory, doesn't work, have to find the solution to that. And it lasted for 8 years. And he found some clue when he was doing one of his siesta rest. That's how he was, many of his insights were coming from the moment where he was doing what he was calling his rest time, siesta. And he described this as he was sitting on his chair, but not leaning against the back of the chair, just sitting quite straight on the chair. Looks like meditation a bit. And he was letting his thoughts go here and there, but he was very much concerned. It was alive in him. That's what I think we need, this alive question. So for him, it was gravity and speed of light. It was not about self and non-self, different question. So different direction, of course. And then he was sitting one day and he suddenly, in this half dream state, he had the feeling as if he was falling into space, empty space. And because of that kind of half dreamy feeling, he realized the rule about gravity. Not gonna go there. But anyway, what is important here is that he had the question and he was putting himself in two situations, imagining him falling into space, which is something nobody can do in reality. Yeah, and scientists do very much that. They do many kinds of experiments that they cannot do in reality, but they do it logically and then they think about it. And then they find, okay, they find some rules. But Einstein, what was specific with him is that he was saying he has a muscular way of thinking, which means he was feeling in his body before he had the idea. So he had the feeling of falling into space. And that gave him some understanding about gravity. Yeah, so that's called experience of thoughts, experimenting with ideas. So what we're going to do, and some of you did it already with me, that's for this morning, we will experiment how the idea that we have no memory impact on our meditation. Any idea that we will bring in our meditation will have an impact. Any concept will have an impact. That's why we're looking for the concept of non-self. Since, and we'll see that in the next talk, self is very strongly related to concept. And since concepts are tied in some ways with the thinking process, we will, and so memory, we will just imagine that the memory stops. And I'll guide this. You don't have to do it. Yeah. And from there, we will, hopefully this will help letting go of a lot of concern about yesterday and tomorrow, because they're both related to memory. Yeah, so if the memory stopped, then yesterday and tomorrow kind of stop. And from there, we can experiment what part of the self disappear and what is left. From there, I will guide it into a more, this idea of awareness itself, which is one aspect of non-self, of seeing non-self, is just awareness. So if this last bit of the explanation of what we're going to do confuses you, don't bother, because I'll anyway guide it from the beginning to the end. You don't have to have understood anything in advance. And after this, we'll have time for feedback and questions.